with his devotees. Krishna is pleased by a number of relationships, and that's why there are many different relationships and different rasas. You know, there are the five primary rasas, and then there are secondary rasas. And there are many, many different ways that the individual living entity can relate to Krishna and can understand Krishna, and Krishna can reciprocate in a variety of ways. So this, of course, is very pleasing to the living entity, but it's also very pleasing to Krishna. We know that Krishna becomes pleased in a variety of ways. He becomes pleased by the glorification and the praise of his devotees. As is described here, this word was Sankirtita, being glorified and praised by the two young demigods. But at the same time, he also becomes pleased by the chastisement of his devotees, particularly in the Vatsalya Rasa, such as Mother Yashoda. In this particular purport, in Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purports in the Bhagavatam, he said, "The chastisement of the Vrajabasis please me much more than the praises I receive from these sons of Kuvera." So actually, Krishna is most pleased by the loving relationships of the most intimate devotees in Vrindavan. So this Vrajalila, Vrindavan pastimes, is really, we understand from our acharyas and from Srila Prabhupada that this is really the highest relationships. This is the highest understanding of Krishna. And Krishna is so much appreciative of the pure love of the devotees in Vrindavan. And in fact, when we think about it, why is he so pleased by this? Because of the selfless nature. Because the devotees of Vrindavan, of Raja, exhibit this highest standard of wanting nothing else but to please Krishna. That's their full absorption. Their full intent, their full motivation is nothing other than to please Krishna. In chapter 32 of this canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's, of course, the story of the rasa dance and of Krishna and Krishna's relationship with the gopis. And then, of course, Krishna at one point, you know, separates and leaves all the gopis. And then they finally reunite. And, of course, the gopis are very upset. And of course, as part of that relationship with them, they're also somewhat chastising of Krishna. Like, how can you treat us like this? How do you do this? We have given up everything for you, and then you do things like this. You leave us, and you abandon us, and like that. And then, of course, a very famous verse, text 32, Krishna says, Napareya ham niri vajya samyuja. He says, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. So we should understand that Krishna becomes very indebted to his pure devotees, to one who has given up everything for him and whose only aspiration is simply to love Krishna and to serve him. Krishna has the greatest appreciation. And as he was saying, that appreciation, like for the gopis, is so great that he cannot even repay them. There's no way that he could repay them. He said, you have to simply be satisfied by your own devotion. And of course they are, because that level of devotion gives one the highest satisfaction, the highest happiness, and the highest bliss. So even when there is, you know, some seeming discomfort or anxiety or stress in the devotees, that simply increases their love. So this loving relationship is going on these very, very deep levels, these very intimate levels between Krishna and his devotees. And this is part of Krishna's glories. This is one of the glorious things of Krishna, that we can understand Krishna on multiple levels. We can understand Krishna as the Supreme, and in fact, we should try to understand the real position of Krishna, particularly as neophytes. We need to very, very clearly understand who Krishna is. Otherwise, we wouldn't possibly understand all these pastimes. We would take them as some mundane thing, and Prabhupada would often stress this, not to take this as something material, that we first have to understand very thoroughly this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, understand the real position of Krishna as the supreme controller, the supreme maintainer, the supreme ruler of everything, and the source of our very life and existence. And then when we understand that position of Krishna, then we can begin a little bit to enter into some of these more intimate pastimes and get a better understanding on the right basis. And so Srila Prabhupada was always very careful to give us these pastimes in the right context. Not that we would just immediately start reading intimate pastimes of Krishna or thinking that we are absorbed in some, you know, very, very deep personal relationship. No. First, we have to understand the beginning. We have to understand the basics. So Krishna has different leelas and different pastimes and different ways he presents himself. It's described in the, actually, I think mostly in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, that we can understand Krishna's pastimes on three different levels of pastimes. You know, that he has his Aishvarya Leela, his Audurya Leela, and his Madhurya pastimes. Of course, the Aishvarya Leela is when he displays himself, his majesty, his full as Ishvara, the controller. So when he is appearing as Narayan or Vishnu, or sometimes in some of his different incarnations and his full power, where he's very clearly understood, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is the Aishvarya feature. And that's something that we need to clearly know and understand. But then there is also his Audurya feature, which is his feature of great mercy, magnanimity, and compassion. And of course, that's best displayed in the form and the feature of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya did not come as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor did he exhibit himself as Krishna in Vrindavan. Rather, he exhibited himself as the devotee of Krishna in the mood of Radharani, and thus gave the mercy of Krishna to all living entities, being in this most merciful mood of Srimati Radharani. And so his pastime was one of saving the conditioned souls. So that's another very, very wonderful pastime and aspect of Krishna that we all can engage in, and I think one that Srila Prabhupada very much emphasized. We could see how Srila Prabhupada emphasized this mood as a follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of preaching and giving Krishna consciousness to the fallen conditioned souls in this Kali Yuga and on this earth planet. So this is, and Prabhupada would explain that when we are preaching, that we are on Harinam or distributing books or in any way that we are engaging the living entities in Krishna consciousness, we are actually part of this pastime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are actively engaging in that, and whether we realize it or not, we are all part of Lord Chaitanya's Audurya Leela pastimes. And then, of course, we have the Madhurya pastimes, which are, Madhurya in this case is often translated as ones of sweetness, these very, very wonderful, intimate, loving relationships with his devotees that we are now reading and studying in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, we've heard many times that you're supposed to go through all the first 9 cantos so that you fully understand the position of Krishna. Then you can begin to hear these pastimes in a proper, respectful mood, understanding who Krishna is. And then, what is so wonderful about this understanding is knowing fully how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then seeing how, on the other hand, he can also act in these very, very intimate ways and loving relationships with his individual devotees is very, very wonderful. And of course, this opens our hearts and helps us to become very attached to Krishna. You know, if the idea of God is very theoretical in one sense, you know, just God the controller, God the supreme, you know, we can kind of understand it, but it doesn't immediately, to me at least, it doesn't invoke a real loving relationship necessarily, a very loving feeling. But when we think of Krishna and we look at the beautiful form of Krishna and we think of Krishna and his activities and loving relationships, we become so attached, we become so attracted. So Krishna gives us and displays these wonderful pastimes, even if we don't fully understand them or if we're not fully able to enter into them, the heart becomes attracted. So Krishna, by giving us the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, these wonderful Vrindavan Leela pastimes, does attract us. And I think most devotees would say that, yes, they become very, very attached and very attracted. And of course, this was something that Prabhupada gave us right from the beginning. He translated, when was it, 1970 that he finished Krishna book? Very early, one of the first works that he completed. And of course, he would personally enjoy having the devotees read Krishna book to him. And of course, we would all read Krishna book at night. Those of us who are older devotees all remember the Krishna book readings and hot milk at night, right? That was the standard policy. And everybody is so much enjoyed. We just hearing these pastimes. I don't know how deeply we understood as neophyte devotees. I don't so deeply understand now, still as a neophyte devotee. But nevertheless, we became very attracted and attached to Krishna through these pastimes. So I was thinking, how is it that we, you know, that Krishna acts in these ways, in very intimate ways, as a as an equal or even a subordinate to his devotees, at the same time that he is maintaining his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when you think about it, Krishna's here getting bound up, you know, to the mortar by Mother Yashoda, acting like a little baby. At the same time, you know, he's keeping the whole, you know, cosmic manifestation in place. You know, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's actually totally beyond our intellectual comprehension when you think about it, how Krishna does all of this simultaneously. So how does he know that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and still act like he's a baby under the care of Mother Yashoda? Or how do the devotees, even, who are, you know, fully realized, complete, pure devotees, that they, of course, we've talked many times about this yoga maya illusion, where Krishna covers the pure devotee so that they can enjoy this personal relationship and personal pastime. And I think one of the best examples, I heard this, I'll have to give proper credit. I heard this from Hridayananda Goswami, so I'll give him the credit for this analogy. But he was explained once in class that it's like if you go and you're watching a movie or a play. When you think about it, there you are, you're in the darkened room and the play or the movie is going on. And if it's a good one, you get really absorbed in it, right? You get very involved in it. You get very involved in the characters. And you're not really thinking about yourself and what you have to do, right? You become completely very, very absorbed in that pastime that's going on. Now, if your friend or whoever's with you next to you kind of bumps you, you know, give, you know, his elbow and says, you know, we're in a movie theater, right? You go, yeah, I know that. And then you kind of get back in the movie and say, you know, these are only actors. This isn't really happening. It's just a movie. And you go, well, yeah, I understand that they're actors and it's only a movie. And they keep going, and finally he would say, would you please be quiet? You're ruining the movie, you know? I'm trying to enjoy, you know, getting involved in this experience, and, you know, you kind of keep interrupting me. So I think that's one way to understand it, what's happening there with Krishna. I mean, yes, obviously, Krishna knows he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and many of his devotees, even in Vrindavan Leela, occasionally they will express that, yeah, they understand who Krishna is and he's God, but they very quickly forget it, don't they? But then they very quickly, the yoga maya comes over again. And so why? So that they can enjoy these wonderful, loving relationships. Because this is what Krishna likes to do. Have you thought, well, it's very, very difficult. We can't put ourselves, you know, with the mind of God. How can we? You know, we're these tiny, insignificant living entities. And, you know, Krishna is the supreme who knows everything that's going on in the universe. The super soul within the heart of every living entity. And within, Prabhupada said, not only within every atom, but between every atom. So the super soul, Krishna is all pervading. So, you know, there's no way we can understand. But a little bit we can sort of think by some of these analogies. Understand how Krishna wants to enjoy these wonderful pastimes. Thought about it. If you were God, would you like to, you know, I mean, the Christians have, or sometimes some descriptions, I shouldn't say Christians, but sometimes there's a description of God just sitting there in heaven on a throne, kind of, you know, watching everything or making judgments on people. Is that the most fun thing you could do if you were God? If you were the supreme and you could do whatever you wanted, you could create whatever you would want, what would you do? Well, what you would do is you would create a place like Vrindavan, and you would have these wonderful loving exchanges with wonderful devotees that you have expanded and created, all the Jiva souls and the Vishnu Tattva and the Shakti Tattvas. This is what you would do. This is what God does. And we're fortunate enough to have this revealed to us through the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Even in this material world, we can understand this. What relationships, what really pleases people the most? Most people ultimately, if you took random polls of people, and people are satisfied by different things, but most people are satisfied in relationships. pretty much. So we can understand that people are very absorbed in their children. You know, the mother or the father, they think, you know, you can experience this. Every parent thinks their child is the most wonderful child that was ever born, that they're very, very special, and they're just very unique, and I just have this incredible child. We all think that way. Now, can everybody have the best child? Of course not. It's illusion, in one sense. You know, but you can see that loving attachment is there. That's natural. It's natural because Krishna has that relationship. And Krishna has the Vatsalya Rasa is so wonderful, where Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are so totally absorbed in Krishna, and he's so totally absorbed in accepting their love. So absorbed in accepting that love that he even accepts the chastisement. For him, it's fun to be chastised, for Mother Yashoda to run around and have to try to catch him and him be naughty. And, you know, this is all part of the fun of that relationship. We were very, very nice the other day when we were hearing about Krishna Balaram's pastimes and reading through how the chapter on Prahlambasura in the beginning of that, how Krishna and Balaram were playing with the coward boys and playing all kinds of games. And did it say in the verse, or somebody had mentioned that it was mentioned that these are very universal. Remember that? That it said that children all over the world do these same kind of games? Well, why? Because it's there in the Supreme. Everything that we do is a reflection of what is there in the Supreme. So because Krishna plays all of these wonderful games, naturally the living entities also like to play all these games when they're children. I was thinking that after that class about childhood. Now, some people do not have very happy childhoods, so we don't want to give a false presentation of the material world. It can be pretty miserable. But in its best, I would say in its very best, some of us may have experienced moments in childhood which were very carefree. You know, those, you know, school's out, it's summer, you're just hanging out and doing a lot of the same kind of things, playing different games with your friends and like that, and running around just sort of blissfully ignorant of everything, of all the problems of the world. So you can see how there's a natural attraction for that same Sakya Rasa that Krishna and Balaram are exhibiting when they're playing with their friends. Now again, if there was this total knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was there, how would that work? Imagine, you know, the Krishna says to Sridham or Sridhar, he says, yeah, let's wrestle now. And he said, and Sridham says, well, we could, but of course you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're all powerful. I mean, you're suspending and holding up all the universe. What's the point of trying to wrestle with you? I couldn't possibly beat you. That wouldn't be very much fun, would it? You know, so Krishna allows him to think, yes, that they're almost like equals. And sometimes Krishna's defeated by his coward boys. That was the story, right? That Balaram had to carry Prahlambasura because he had defeated him in the fight. So this is all part of these wonderful pastimes that go on, where the total knowledge, where Aishwarya and Jnana are suspended by the yoga maya potency so that they can be fully exhibited. And of course, we can see that in the material world, even particularly in the material world, everyone is enamored by this romantic love concept. The conjugal rasa, of course, which is there in the Supreme between Krishna and the gopis, Krishna and the queens and Dwarka, etc., is obviously the perverted reflection of that very much here in the material world. We often think of when we say the perverted reflection, we think of that, the sex desire, that it's there in the material world as the reflection of this. But actually, if you think about it, even stronger than sex desire, strong as that is, and that's a very strong controlling force, but this idea of like romantic love and attachment sometimes is even stronger, isn't it? People become very, very attached to this idea of romantic love. And I was thinking about this because when I used to teach different things, development and things in psychology, sometimes we study these topics as part of adult development and the development of intimacy and relationships like that. And I was doing looking some of those ideas up again recently online. I think that even the psychologists point out that this sort of stage of romantic love is an illusion. I mean, it's even known by those who study this that there is so much illusion about this in the material world. Particularly, in fact, it's all been researched and documented. There's a stage that lasts about 1 to 2 years. You know, when people, that idea of falling in love, right? We all either experienced it or heard of it or read about it, or you can, I mean, when you think about it, half of the world's literature, movies, art, music, songs is all about this, right? This is probably the number one theme that is throughout most of the creative arts, this idea of love. And it's not like they don't sing songs about, old couples, who've been married 40 years and they have, kind of a really mature, nice relationship and they kind of really like each other. No, it's all this young infatuation. That's what it's all about. And infatuation is a good word for it. So this stage actually only lasts 1 or 2 years at max. So this has been researched on it. Where you think you just, can't wait to see the other person, you're just so enamored by them, this is the most wonderful person in the world. What happens is the illusion wears off. Another thing that wears off is, interestingly enough, they've done a lot of recent research about the biochemical relationship of romantic love. And what they found is this falling in love. They've actually, one author called it, like DUI is driving under intoxication. They called it LUI, loving under the influence. Because what is the influence? The influence is basically that when one falls in love, they're influenced by an increase in dopamine, endorphins, a very strong chemical called PEA, adrenaline, and a decrease in serotonin. Now, of course, most antidepressants are serotonin uptake inhibitors, which means that they decrease the serotonin level in the brain, and that gives you a feeling of well-being. Well, the same thing happens when you are in love, quote-unquote. So really what's happening is a very strong chemical reaction, which I'm sure has some biologically inherent reason for it, so people get together and have children and increase this, the species goes on. It's probably all there for, good reasons to keep the material world going. But we have to realize that, and even the psychologists realize that this is illusion. Now, if we return to our topic of Krishna in Vrindavan, the gopis have these tight, this is kind of like a reflection of these strong, intense feelings of a passion and romance and complete absorption and love that is there between Krishna and the gopis. Now, what's the difference? Well, one difference is the material world, it lasts about a year, and the spiritual world, it lasts eternally. In fact, it only increases. So what doesn't really work, what's illusion in this material world, becomes the greatest source of happiness and the greatest spiritual ecstasy in relationships in Vrindavan. So everything is eternal in the spiritual world, and these relationships are eternal, and these relationships are ever increasing in their spiritual bliss and ecstasy. So what we experience in the material world is natural. It's natural that we look for these relationships, and it's natural that we want this type of happiness because it is our spiritual nature. It's our sarup, it's our identity. We are meant to be in loving relationships. Unfortunately, in the material world, they're misplaced. They're misplaced on the wrong objects. The object of our love and our affection and relationship is not something that can last. As Yudhishthir said about our family members, they're called them fallible soldiers. Why are they? Well, first of all, of course, they'll disappoint you in many ways. But ultimately, they can't save us at death. And we can't, and those relationships cannot continue. Where I was just hearing at some lecture, Srila Prabhupada was saying, somebody was asking Srila Prabhupada, or maybe it's one of the memory tapes, someone was describing a lecture where somebody it was Yoko Ono. Yoko Ono had asked Srila Prabhupada, she wanted to have this eternal relationship with John Lennon, okay? So, she asked Prabhupada about this, like, would they have this eternal relationship? And Prabhupada said, no, at the time of death, it is over. And after that point, he said, Dhananjaya, or one of the early devotees, was saying this. He said that Yoko lost interest. And John was a little bit interested. Yoko lost all interest in Krishna consciousness. Well, if I can't have this eternal relationship, everything in this material world goes on forever, I don't want this. Because she couldn't understand. She didn't have the spiritual intelligence to understand. Yes, you actually can have eternal loving relationships and eternal love, but not in the material world, not with these material bodies. It's a spiritual process. And one with a little more intelligence can understand that. Yes, this is what I'm looking for, but it has to be rightly placed. And that's what this Krishna conscious movement gives us. He gives us the understanding of where to place that love, where to put our affection, where to put our relational energies. Into that which will last, into the Supreme, ultimately into our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So that is our eternal nature, and as we engage in devotional service in the process of bhakti yoga, that develops more and more gradually. Of course, one of our difficulties, I would say, at least in many of our current stages of Krishna consciousness, some of you may be more deeply absorbed in your eternal relationship with Krishna. But for myself, I realize that sometimes it's difficult because I'm not fully absorbed in my eternal relationship with Krishna. That's still something that I'm striving for the future. So how, with the understanding and the philosophy that we have, what do we do? How do we satisfy that need for relationship? Well, there are several ways. First of all, of course, we have relationships with devotees. And those relationships with devotees are not material. Well, they could be material, but if they are centered around Krishna, then they are spiritual relationships. So we can have relationships with our families, with our god brothers, our god sisters, our fellow devotees. Those relationships can be there, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, but we center those relationships around Krishna in mutual service to Krishna. And in fact, we find that the more we do that, usually the more happy we are and the more satisfying those relationships are. Because if devotees try to have a relationship where Krishna's very, very minor part off to the side, those relationships usually don't work very well. And there are usually a lot of problems and dissatisfaction, because then it sort of comes down to more and more, how much satisfaction do I get from this individual person? And you know what? Your husband will not be Krishna and your wife will not be Radharani. That's what we're all hoping for, and it doesn't happen. So we have to be realistic in our expectations and understand that that is not where we're going to find that type of satisfaction. You know, but nevertheless, through devotees, we also begin to understand Krishna. Krishna speaks through his devotees. We have so many relationships, and we see that in the pastimes, like particularly in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, we see these wonderful, loving relationships between devotees. You know, it's like you read some of these pastimes. Of course, these are great, exalted devotees. And when they meet each other, do they say, Jai Prabhu, and they just quote a verse? You know, no. They're laughing and hugging each other and crying and falling down in ecstasy in each other's arms, right? I mean, it's very, very emotional. I mean, they're very deep relationships between devotees. So those should be there. We should cultivate and value those loving relationships with devotees, because it's completely within our Vaishnava line. That's what we're about. We're about bhakti, about devotion, about opening the heart and relationship. So we don't deny that, but we put it in the right place. We channel it correctly. We also have relationship with our guru. And we experience very, very deep relationship with Srila Prabhupada or our spiritual master. You know, and that's also very, very satisfying. And of course, we relate to Krishna through his deity form. You know, and those who are pujaris, particularly all of us, but those particularly who serve the deity, you know, can get great realization of their relationship with Krishna through Krishna's deity form. And we also begin to understand and appreciate and relate to Krishna through his holy name. We all hear and we know the philosophy that Krishna and his name are non-different. But if we actually deeply get absorbed in that, we understand not only is Krishna's name non-different, but we have a relationship with Krishna, we have a relationship with his holy name. And we become more and more absorbed in that, we can realize Krishna through his name. You know, so, and of course, those of you who have gone to japa workshops, that's something they emphasize so much, that you know, we establish relationship with the holy name through our chanting and through our absorption, particularly in our japa. So that's something that's very, very important. I know for myself, whenever I don't feel so, you know, enlivened about Krishna consciousness or feeling any difficulties or like that, usually it's I'm not chanting as well or something. Or conversely, if I really concentrate on chanting, then usually things become much more clear, become more apparent, and you feel more peaceful. You know, so many, because most of the anxieties and difficulties we feel They're either due to, you know, difficulties with our body and our senses, or more often difficulties with our mind. You know, the mind is sort of the seat of all of our problems and anxieties and issues in Krishna consciousness. And when we're chanting Hare Krishna, of course, mantra means that delivers the mind. That's the meaning of the word mantra. So chanting, deeply becoming absorbed in the chanting of Hare Krishna, basically, as we like to say, gets us off the mental plane, right? Away from the mind and the absorption and the problems and the anxieties and the issues that our mind will continually bring up, and it will never stop. You know, of course, when you're involved, like we have been for many years with counseling with devotees, you understand that there's always going to be so many difficulties with the mind. And you really cannot solve all the problems. The way that you solve the problems of the mind is by transcending the mind, by being absorbed in Krishna consciousness and realizing our spiritual relationships. So in these ways, we become absorbed in our relationship with Krishna and Guru. Little by little, Krishna will reveal himself. And in the meantime, we can enjoy and absorb ourselves in these wonderful Vrindavan Leela pastimes of Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So are there any questions or comments? Dharmaraj Prabhu?
So, these two demigods, Nalakuvra and Managriv, they were there, you know, witnessing Krishna's pastimes. But they weren't able to be a part as the Brijvasis were, because yeah, they were seeing Krishna as God, whereas the others, they weren't. So yeah, so all the most they could have done was to offer prayers to Krishna, you know, because they were seeing him as the Lord. So that was, in this sense, their unfortunate position, being right in Vraj with Krishna's pastimes, but the Yogamaya potency didn't cover them.
Yeah.
So that was like a big difference with them, because they knew all the pastimes. Sometimes the others would question them, how come you actually knew all these pastimes? Where were you? But because they were there, you know, witnessing all, so they knew. But their relationship was different. I just want to make that point.
Yeah, and that's interesting, very interesting point that comes out often in these pastimes. Isn't it even in one pastime, is it with Narada Muni? Where Narada Muni, who is one of our most exalted, you know, devotees, he's the second in our parampara line. And at one point, he completely glorifies the gopis and totally understands that this is the highest devotional service. But yet, he doesn't directly partake in that himself. And that's part of it is, of course, Narada Muni always is he's always recognizing, cognizant of Krishna's position, and of course preaching and glorifying Krishna all over the world, the most incredible, wonderful service, wonderful devotee. But yet, as you said, he's also not having, you know, this yogamaya covering which allows him to enter into the most deep relationships like the gopis and Mother Yashoda. Yeah. It's very, very special. Yeah. Anything else? Chirukram Prabhu.
So in these relationships, can one change, say, from Vatsala to Dasya or whatever else, really? I mean, is there any information of that?
Srila Prabhupada's father? What was it?
Where one says in friendship with the Lord, but then he changes to something as parenthood or...
Oh, if one can change one's rasa?
Yeah,
is that
yeah,
the question?
Yeah.
I heard it. Srila Prabhupada said that at least once that I know of. There's a couple of references. I don't know a lot about it. I wish I could answer your question better, but I have heard that reference where Srila Prabhupada said that it's possible to change or elevate, you know, one's rasa from one to another. Generally, we think of that one has sort of a set rasa or a sarup, you know, relationship that we all have, and that's kind of revealed to us. But yeah, that's also mentioned, that can change. Yeah. Dharmaraj? Maybe Dharmaraj can answer this for us.
Actually, when Lord Ram appeared, all these sages, they were worshiping Lord Ram, they have that relationship.
Yeah.
But then towards the end, they said, "Oh, you know, we want you to be our lover. We want to be close with you." So he said, "Okay, well then, come back with me in Krishna's pastime. Then you know, you can be my lover."
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's so one of the examples. That's one of the groups of gopis, those sages of that were with Lord Ramachandra.
Gopis. Similarly, with the cowherd boys, some of those devotees in Lord Ram's pastime said, "We want to play with you." So he said, "Okay, you want to play? Then let's play. Come with me, but not in this lifetime, not in this pastime, but come with me in Krishna's pastime. So then you can change and you can play. Let's play."
Actually, pure devotees are very amazing people. Talking about this, like changing relationships and stuff. It's actually mentioned. I don't know if I said this before, but in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami mentions that. You know, there's Nanda and Sananda, the gatekeepers in Vaikuntha. I think their names are Nanda and Sananda. Not gatekeepers, but they're somewhere in Vaikuntha. And he said that that's Nanda is the same Nanda as Nanda Maharaj. He's like both places. So who can understand, you know, the power and the potency of devotees, what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Anyway, I don't really understand that exactly, but... very interesting. Anything else? Oh, I'm sorry, Nartaka.
I really appreciated your psychological explanation of how we just have that so-called material euphoria of being in love only lasts a couple years, and then after that it's like the long haul of just... hopefully, you know, mutual respect and admiration and to carry the relationship through. And, of course, some type of material or even spiritual love of the person as a devotee. But and I appreciated Dharmaraj's comment, too, just now. But unfortunately, in the material world, you know, a certain amount of people are... even, you know, non-devotees are mature enough to understand that or at least live their life, you know, like that. But then there's such a percentage of people that just want to give up a relationship as soon as that euphoria goes away and just find it again. So they're just searching and sort like that. And it's really our duty as preachers to get them to understand that really what they're looking for is Krishna. Krishna is the only one who will really fulfill that desire. And Krishna also will never leave us. He'll never divorce us. You know, so.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Again, yes, we can only really be satisfied by Krishna. Just as another point of that you reminded me of, is that that's one of the reasons given why we have such a high divorce rate in America and also in other Western countries, because his expectation level is so high. Because we're so absorbed in this idea of romantic love, where in other cultures, there's really more realistic, you know, sense of duty and sense of family. And, you know, so many other factors are there that a person's not expecting this euphoric high of romance is going to last forever. But because we're expecting that, when that falls off, then the only way that you can actually get that back is with a new partner. It's actually a fact. You know, the only way that you get that relationship would be in a new relationship. So people sometimes go from relationship to relationship trying to find that. And rather than, as Nartaka Gopal is indicating, obviously the intelligent thing is that you have to deepen that relationship so that it's real and it's meaningful and incorporates the realities of life. You know, obviously in Krishna consciousness, husband and wife can stay together for a lifetime, working together mutually, you know, raising their children in Krishna consciousness, serving together, and be very happy in Krishna consciousness. You know, we don't need the illusion that's there just disturbing the mind, but there is a reality of loving relationships and service together as well. Thank you. Okay, we should probably end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.